Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Actually do some radio for a change, what do you say? Sorry about last night. Wasn't planned. Wasn't hooky. Wasn't even fun. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice, found at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Listen Live at the link at whiterosesociety.org, via Stitcher, via Tuner Radio. Oh, golly Moses, we are all over the place. If you're listening on something else, or we're at iTunes Radio, we're podcasting at iTunes, you can get the podcasts at White Rose Society. If you're listening some other way, I'd love to know it, because we like to know every means by which the Horn family comes together for our little evening conversations. Really. I am sorry about last night. I was sitting here all ready to go and had everything fired up, and you know how all that goes, right? But then we couldn't connect to the servers, and the Horn website was down, the White Rose was down, and so that kind of, that was a clue. And our good friend, our dear friend, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org immediately recognized those clues. And we found out that our servers, our hosting company, was all the way down to the ground. And it's kind of it's a reminder of just how fragile this system is, these interweb tubes. Because, as it turns out, in an email that came from Ben, sort of explaining exactly what had happened, well, the way it shook out was this. They explained that a failure in a core router at our data center caused an outage for a number of our customers. The backup router for that core router was temporarily overloaded. As a result, all the traffic on the failed router has now been transferred to a new core router. The problem was identified and corrected as quickly as possible and should not have impacted your service for more than 3 hours. And that's about how long it did. We were able to start sending the regular 24/7 rerun stream about 3 hours, 4 hours after, after showtime. So there was no show. Although I was reminded by Lottie in the chat room, one of our chat room moderators, our head mod, that in instances such as that, I can always, I should have been thinking, I can always just fire up the Ustream and direct everybody there. So maybe next time that's what we'll do. I was just so busy eating my own liver at the time, and no onions, that I didn't have the presence of mind to think about that, so my apologies there. But that's why we weren't here last night. But we're here tonight, and tonight is Friday on the front porch. It's brisk. Most of the snow here has melted away. We've had a sunny day since, and I guess it's going to be sunny and dry for a lot of us over the weekend, so not make hay while the sun shines, but make something, for God's sakes. Enjoy what, and I guess no white Christmas is in order for many of us either. But enjoy the weekend as it comes forward. But Friday on the front porch, it's a time to come up, kick knock the clods off the boots, and prop your feet up on the rail, and sit and relax. And as John Fox says in the intro, cuss and discuss. And that, by Jove, is what I have in mind for us to do this evening. I hope you do as well, because conversations don't work very well when I'm the only one conversing. No, sadly, Marty, I was fresh out of fava beans and a nice Chianti to go with the liver, my own liver that I was eating last night. Can you still hear the lambs, Clarice? That's what I hope for this evening. A quick reminder, we operate here on kind contributions from listeners. And we're looking, you know, every month we look for 250 folks to kick in 10 bucks a piece. It works out to about less than 5 cents an hour for the programming once you figure out everything that goes into it. Or at least that's what the math said the last time I did it. And my math is, of course, always suspect, but there it is. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, as is the snail mail address. And by the way, I had a request in from Boss Man Wayne last night. If you prefer to go with snail mail and you prefer to write checks, please make checks payable to Head On Communications or Head On Radio Network, something like that. Not Bob Kincaid, because that makes it hard for him to be able to deposit them to the Horn account. He just mentioned it to me in passing last night and asked me to pass that on along to y'all, simply because I'm not always with him. And as I've explained before, Boss Man Wayne takes care of what comes in the mailbox. And he takes care, because he writes most of the checks for the bills. So just, please make a note of it, like the little recording says on the telephone. Now, where do we begin tonight? Friday on the front porch is technically and usually we try to have some more lighthearted stuff. I don't know that it will be lighthearted all night long, but we hope. By the way, if you've never been to the Head On Radio Network chat room, I encourage you to give it a try. It's free, it's easy, and there's great folks in there having wonderful conversation all during the course of the program. We're still sideways on why the normal entry to the chat room doesn't work, but if you just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, you'll see the backdoor link, and you can sign in, sign up, register, what have you, very easily. And I encourage you to do so, because it's just a heck of a lot of fun. For reaching the program, you know that all you need to do is dial the phone line, or you can email. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, and that's pretty easy, and I try to read a great deal of what comes in during the show, and I respond to queries when responses are called for, even after hours. This is something I kind of do full-time, and by full-time I mean just about every hour of every day. Lord of mercy, I mean, we answer phone calls here at 3 o'clock in the morning from folks who think we're live. Because you kind of got it, right? Yeah. But we do badly need your help right now. With the front end of December, we are miles behind, and we fall behind every month. And I know how tight and hard things are out there. But every night we look for maybe 10 folks to kick into the Thrifty 250, because that's about what it takes to keep up, on an average over the course of a month. 10 folks, 10 bucks a piece. If we got 20, that would be great. If we got all 250, that would be even better, because then I'd just, after the show was over, I would engage in a flurry of paying the bills that I can pay from here and making sure Boss Man Wayne can pay the ones that he pays. Some stuff you can do online, some stuff you can't. But that's where it is. So if you want to help out, headonradionetwork.com/contribute. Okay? And I'll try to make that the last I say tonight, unless there's this flurry of, and then I'll mention it to you because it'll be really, really cool. Where to begin tonight? It's kind of difficult because I had stuff that I wanted for us to be able to discuss last night and see above. So I don't know whether to go with current stuff or stuff that's a couple of days old. start out with the funny stuff, get to the, well, I don't know. I don't know. I do want to get this out of the way because it is so heavy. And that is the shooting at Virginia Tech. I saw that unfolding yesterday in the course of the afternoon during show prep. Watched the saw the hashtag happen, went over to where the hashtag was happening, and stuff on Twitter was just flying so fast you couldn't read it. And I don't know, maybe there's no need for me to say this. But every time one of these happens, I feel compelled to simply remark and remind us all, as we sit in slack-jawed horror at, once again, human beings being put out of this world as a result of gun violence, that all the shock and surprise and horror is not going to make it stop. If nothing else, we are a big bunch of realists here. And we simply have to realize that because the National Rifle Association exists, and that because the National Rifle Association exists almost exclusively in order to advance Republican policies in this country, especially policies with regard to guns, this is always going to happen. Now, there's nobody in their right or rational mind who can argue that the Second Amendment was designed for anything other than the maintenance of a militia. But Bob, the Supreme Court ruled. Remember, I said people in their right or rational mind. That excludes, among millions of others, Slappy Thomas, Fat Tony Scalia, Sammy Alito, and John Deadeyes Roberts. Because they're not rational. They merely do the bidding of the right wing. There's nothing impartial about a blessed thing that they do. But anyway, so I simply want to point out with the Virginia Tech shooting yesterday, for whatever reasons that it happened, the irony being that it happened at a time when Virginia Tech officials were in a hearing over the inadequacy of their response back during the Virginia Tech massacre some years ago, which was wholly inadequate. There's a certain irony in that. But every time one of these nightmares takes place, every time one of these nightmares leaves the realm of nightmares and comes into the land of flesh and blood, we react with shock and we react with horror, with disgust. A lot of people immediately say things about the shooter. Well, he was crazy. Nobody in their right mind would do that. Thereby sort of creating a psychic landscape in which we can be sure that it will happen again. And I guess the only thing that I would say coming out of that horror yesterday, in which a father of five was a campus police officer, was gunned down for reasons that are not yet apparent, or at least I wasn't able to find out. There are five fatherless children tonight, because by however it is that the universe works, it was time for us to make another installment payment on our butcher's bill that we gladly embrace so that sexually frustrated, paranoid, weirded out right-wingers can carry firearms to teabagging meetings and carry signs that says, Scott Brown, if Scott Brown can't stop Obamacare, Browning can. I hate to say it, but there's an element of, forget about it, Jake, it's Chinatown to all of this. It's just who we are. Every now and then, we have to pay the butcher's bill in this macabre dance of death that we somehow insist upon defining as evidence of our freedom. You know, in all those years, I sat in all those little classrooms, little old Bob who had no idea what the future held for him. Sitting there learning all of that stuff that the teachers were imparting about how good we here in the United States are. And learning things about our freedoms, like how we've got freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And freedom to keep and arm bears. I never realized that because of that freedom to keep and arm bears, what we really have is the freedom to grieve. The freedom to weep. The freedom to collapse to our knees and to cry at the top of our lungs, "Oh God, no, 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 no." The freedom to be shaken to the very core of our being. Because in Fairfax, Virginia, there's a mirrored glass cube of a building filled with scurrying little rats whose only job in the world is to make sure that it keeps happening. It is almost as though the National Rifle Association and Americans in Favor of Guns and Gun Owners of America and all of those filthy, filthy people, it's almost as though they feed on our grief. They feed on our horror. They feed, they feast upon the tears of those left behind by the people blown away into their constituent parts by gun violence. I know this isn't going to play well with some listeners. I myself am an owner of firearms. I don't say this as some sort of a purist. They'd run me out of the state of West Virginia if I didn't own guns. But I learned a little something yesterday in the course of watching my Twitter feed, because I simply tweeted, "Don't panic. This is just another installment payment on our butcher's bill." And I began receiving tweets back saying, that people who, peaceful people leave guns at home. If you take away guns, we are no longer peaceful, but oppressed. I responded. You can go and look at my Twitter stream. And I asked, does that mean that people who want nothing to do with guns are also oppressed, even though they don't know it? And the response was, people who want nothing to do with guns would be oppressed if their right to have arms was taken away. And I'm sorry, I couldn't more profoundly disagree with that. There is this fantasy, this myth that exists in this country that makes, and it's a fantasy and a myth because it cannot stand up to any sort of rational scrutiny, that if a guy has a 45 caliber Glock and a 12 gauge shotgun, that somehow he's preserving his freedom. Yeah, there are ancillary arguments like, well, I have mine for home invasion. Because I guess everything's a war zone here. Never mentioned are the statistics that deal with people who have firearms and wind up having them used against them. Go figure. Or the number of suicides committed by firearm owners. No, the NRA and People for the American Gun, the American Association of Firearm Loving American Patriots, or whatever the hell they call themselves, they don't talk about those ugly little realities. And then came this remark, best hope this country doesn't go the way of others. What way? I haven't seen anyone goose-stepping through the streets of Germany or France or Sweden or Norway or England or... No! It's a myth. Do you see? It is a facade. And there is ultimately a question of real depth that has to be asked. It doesn't have to be asked of me. It doesn't probably have to be asked of you. But again, it's one of those questions that will never be asked and will never have a straight answer to, because God knows nobody in the for-profit 1% media would dare ask it. And that question is this. You take one of your Second Amendment right to keep an arm bears God guns and America made God guns and America great types. And you say, Buster, I want to ask you a question. All right. God bless America. All right, Eustace. Listen up. I'll talk real slow-like and use little bitty words. You being a Second Amendment patriot and everything. Mine's all taken up with protecting your freedom with your firearms and such like. Eustace, if you and Cletus could guarantee that by giving up your firearms, some total stranger you don't know would not be left laying in a pool of blood at some indeterminate, ooh, that's a big word, at some time in the future. If just you and Cletus given up your guns and you could have a written guarantee, this is a need another word for hypothetical for the Second Amendment people out there. It's too big a word. Made up. This is a made up fact pattern. I'm getting on shaky ground with pattern, I know, but let's say God, Jesus. Let's say Jesus came down to you and said, Eustace, Cletus, if you'll get rid of your guns, Arlie won't be dead next week in a pool of blood. If you continue to keep your guns, Arlie's gonna die. And it's not like you're gonna kill him or anything. But it's just the connection. Are you still with me there, Eustace? You still with me there, Cletus? I mean, you like Arlie and everything, right? He's a neighbor. He's one of your buddies. Well, you've got a choice. You can keep your guns, and Arlie winds up in a pool of blood, and his children are fatherless, and his wife is without any form of support forever after and has to go on the welfare. Or you can put down your guns and walk away, Eustace, Cletus, and they get to live. Which is it, Eustace? What'll it be, Cletus? But that question will never be asked. And even if it was Jesus Christ himself asking that question, they would never give you a straight answer. Well, that ain't fair! Where did it say life is fair, boys? Because you see, of all the people out there, the ones who know deepest down in their hearts that their weird, fetishized, sexualized fascination with these engines of death, in particular handguns, the ones who know that their weird, sexualized, fantasized, fetishized fascination with handguns is a direct connection to all the bloodshed that happens, those guys. And see, this is where you have to drill down kind of deep into the morality of handgun ownership. Because you know what? They don't care. They are more than happy to suck up those tears and to lap up that blood. Because that means that they get to go on being free. Because, again, freedom is some sort of thing that they've put up there alongside the other stuff that exists in their imaginary world. Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny, Risen Christ, you know. And that's why it's going to continue to happen. We're going to continue to have grieving widows, devastated mamas and daddies, simply because the sexualized, fetishized, fantasized business of owning handguns has a more profound effect on the minds of millions of Americans than does the idea of letting their neighbor live. It's that easy. That's all there is. That's all there is to it. Now, I know for sure that by now some little right-wing nut who hovers, some repiglic and family values voter who wants to protect life and worries all the time about them little fetuses is just a hopping up and down and scratching himself all over like he's got the hives because of what I've just said. And what bothers him most in whatever those thin gray settlings are that slosh between his ears and in other normal, fully developed individuals are referred to as brains, is that I am right. I just am. Will I condemn someone for owning firearms? No. I'm just merely noting the reality. It's just the reality. I'm a part of the problem. Lots of people are part of the problem. We've got firearms here. A handgun in particular. We've got a shotgun. Bless her soul, Judy Bonds, to the day she died, had a firearm by her side because of the overt violence of which the coal thugs are capable. It ain't wise not to have one. I've heard Malloy talk about how he hates guns, but he has one because of what the thugs of the right wing are capable of. Somebody came to me and said, so-and-so's going to live if you'll just turn him in. I wouldn't have a moment's qualm over, you know what? You mean that simple act can alter the future? Yep. Here. But because the right wing and the gun fanciers have fetishized their gun ownership along the lines of really religious orthodoxy. They can't do that. They can't come to that conclusion. Because they've got their firearm ownership all wrapped up in tri-cornered hats and men, little boys marching with beating on a drum and playing a fife and carrying a ragged old flag. And then that's why they show up at teabagging rallies dressed like that. It is a deal with the devil that we make. Jay and Yuma writing in, Bob, it is true that having a gun in the home greatly increases the chance that someone in that home will be shot to death. So when I get into these discussions, the first thing I tell those people is go ahead and keep your guns. Go ahead and kill your wife or children. It'll improve the overall gene pool. I find that this tends to end the conversation. Yeah. Because the statistics are very real. But the business with that fife and drum corps and the bandage on the head and the little boy with his drum and the ragged old flag, that BS drives me crazy. Because there is not a... Well, oh, no, there are. There's lots of them. And generally, we eventually find out about them when they decide it's time to step up and to strike a blow for democracy. Like that crowd up in Michigan. Or that crowd in Idaho. Or that crowd in Texas. Or that crowd in Alabama. You get the idea, right? But there's nobody out there with the firepower in an ordinary American home to hold off 21st century authoritarian state stormtroopers. Hell, they'll burn your home down and shoot you while you're running out the door. This is not the Alex Jones show, by the way. But in a world where the government has supersonic fighter aircraft, helicopters, tanks, armored personnel carriers, paratroopers, machine gunners, grenade throwers, you and your 30-06 ain't standing for freedom. Every home is not the goddamn Alamo. Do you understand? Sorry, I think I'm screaming at the wingnut. I think of a call many years back when our good friend Michael called in and said, you know, Bob, I don't understand the culture that thinks it's important to own a gun. I don't own a gun. I don't want to own a gun. I don't ever want to own a gun. I don't want to go hunting. I don't want to kill anybody. I don't want to shoot clay pigeons, which is fun, by the way. And I tried to sort of explain that rural mindset. You know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, a firearm was more necessary than a plow. Because if the crops didn't come in, you could still wander the woods and bring in squirrels and bunnies and Bambi and keep food on your family. That was then. This is now. Ted Nugent out there running around, I don't eat anything that I don't kill. Well, good for you, Ted. Good for you. But this country can't operate that way. There are 330 million Americans, and there are not enough deers and rabbits and turkeys and bunnies and bugs in the woods to feed a country of that size. All of this stuff that ultimately winds up in a Virginia Tech police officer laying face down in a pool of his own blood is founded on fantasies, myths, and lies. Outright lies. Wonder how many listeners I'll lose out of that one. But it's fact. You know, anybody... I have... I have a healthy respect for firearms because that, and it's good to learn about them because that way you can never be accidentally hurt by one. But I hear people say, yeah, I got this here Glock 9mm in case somebody comes through my door. And the first thing I think of is, I have no respect for you because that means you understand nothing about firearms. And houses. And drywall. You know, that 9mm pistol you're going to use to protect your family? That damn thing's got, the bullet comes out of that thing with a muzzle velocity approaching a mile a second. Or at least a half a mile a second. There ain't much that ain't going through. So you miss and it goes into the baby's room and, well, you know, bye-bye baby. But you head it for home defense. Well, by God, I'm good with my firearm. I practice every Sunday down to the range. Really? Do you practice with somebody coming at you full on? Because that's the reason cops are trained as rigorously as they are. Those reflexes aren't just there. Just saying. Everything I've ever read said if you're going to keep a firearm for home defense, you keep a 410 shotgun. Easy to handle. It'll stop anything needs stopping. And the pellets generally won't go through the wall board into baby's room. But try to explain that to somebody who's in love with his 9mm high-capacity Glock with the banana clip. Good luck. So, okay, we've got that out of the way. We understand that things like the shooting at Virginia Tech yesterday, in which the news story says, on Thursday night, about 150 students gathered silently for a candlelight vigil on a field facing the Stone Plaza Memorial for the victims of the 2007 massacre. Though the official vigil was moved to Friday evening, many turned out anyway to show their support. One student came forward to invite everyone back a day later. He shouted, "Let's go," and the crowd responded, "Hokies." So let's just understand that we're going to keep on having candlelight vigils. Can we do that? Because ain't nobody got the guts to take on the National Ripig-Lickin Rifle Association. Because they even preach this crap in the pulpits. Just saying. But I really did think that we were kind of entitled to a giggle this evening. And I got a big one last night from... Wow, Bob, that was a cold transition. I really did think that I got a good one. Over at Mother Jones, you might recall we discussed the Radio Rwanda... Eric Bolling flip out over the new Muppet movie. Well, apparently that spawned a hashtag. You know, that's those little things that begin with the pound sign, like on your telephone, on the Twitter. The hashtag was GOP Muppet Hearings. And while I was sitting here last night not doing a show, I giggled wildly. Apparently, whoever got this started... did so, as Mother Jones' article notes, sort of merging and melding Fox Business, Fox News, McCarthyism, and Representative Peter King's radicalization hearings with that hashtag GOP Muppet Hearings. Here's a few of the better ones. I like to imagine, Representative High Pockets Sleazewitz examining the witnesses in the hearing. Meep, meep, meep is not speech, Mr. Beaker. Money is speech. Now, Mr. the Grouch, do you have a permit to occupy Sesame Street? Mr. the Chef, you submitted testimony, but it just says bork, bork, bork. For 7 pages. I can't understand it, sir. And you! You! Mr. the Frog! Tell us a little more about this whole rainbow connection. Are you trying to advance the gay agenda, Mr. the Frog? Mr. Animal, would you say Jesus Christ is your personal Lord and Savior? Please stop breathing so hard. No, Mr. Count, you may not plead the First, Second, Third, and Fourth Amendments. Ha 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 ha. No, you may not. This is some of the fun stuff that actually happens on Twitter from time to time. I got a giggle. And by the way, speaking of the rainbow connection, you know how the weirdos, the repressed, tamped down, hung up, strange people of the religious, the right-wing religion industrial complex, you know how they're constantly, well, going on about the Homer sectionals? Yeah. Well, for anyone out there who thinks that maybe of all those crazy Republicans out there, at least Ron Paul's normal, drives me crazy when I hear people who sound otherwise liberal or progressive say, well, you know, he's got some good ideas. The guy's crazier than a sprayed roach. And it turns out, ha-ha, that out there in Iowa way, Ron Paul has him a new outreach coordinator. Remembering, of course, that right-wingers blame the Homer sectionals for the decline of morals in America, for earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis. Well, if you're going to get ahead in Iowa, you need one of those folks. That's why the Ron Paul campaign and Ron Paul himself done hired him up a feller by the name of Mike Heath. Mike Heath is the outreach coordinator for Iowa Way. Trying to get those family values voters, many of whom are gun owners, by the way, trying to get those family values voters to carcass for Ron Paul. Mike Heath comes with some serious right-wing religion industry lunatic cred. Mike Heath's former job was with the Maine Family Policy Council. You know what they're about. Homer sectionals are destroying my marriage! He was also with the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Stan. Now listen very carefully, Ron Paul people. Because I want you, I want this all the way, I want this to sink in all the way to your toenails. This guy works for Ron Paul. Ron Paul therefore endorses what this guy thinks. And what this guy, Mike Heath, thinks as he's outreaching in the churches of Iowa Way is that Homer sectionals are responsible for endless rain and gloom. No, really. Here's the quote. Our leaders allowed a cloud of error to hide the light of reason, and then the rain began. Our crops are faring like our moods. The potato crop is blighted, and corn and fruit fields wither. Because of the Homer sectionals. I'm just glad to be on the gay folks' side because I don't ever want any of that crap unleashed on me. I don't, trust me, you know, dodgy roof, crummy floors, bad plumbing, sabotaged automobiles. I don't need any volcanoes, earthquakes, hailstones, The plagues of frogs and locusts, crop failure, or endless gloomy rain. So I'll just stay on the decent people's side, if that's okay. I hope y'all don't mind. Jesus. Crop failure? I thought that's what the locusts were for. But, you know, who the hell am I? And then this. Just a little sign of, one of those little signposts that says, "You are here, 2011. A story concerning a lady by the name of Elizabeth Alicia Greta Halfmoon of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Elizabeth Alicia Greta Halfmoon is 45 years old. And the other day, she spent about 6 hours wandering around the Wally World there in Tulsa. By the way, did you know? Probably deserves further examination and discussion. The six Walton heirs, it has been divulged, discovered. The six Walton heirs have as much money between them as the entire bottom, more than, Jesus, more than, the six Walton heirs have between them, together, pressed down and shaken together, as the good book says, more money than the entire lower 30% of people in the entire new United States of America. Amen. Praise Jeebus. Got that? The net worth of six people is greater. Let's see. Oh, dear God. Bob ciphering on the air again. 330 to 10. Okay, carry that. And, okay, so that's roughly. Funny how these numbers work out. The six Walton heirs have more money taken together than the bottom 99 million Americans. And they're just heirs, okay? Understand that. They're just heirs. They're kind of like that Bible verse. They neither tarry nor do they sow. They just happen to pop out of the right uterus at the right time. Born on third, thinking they hit a triple. They're just heirs. They haven't contributed anything to society. They haven't done any great thing. They haven't discovered a cure for cancer or AIDS. They haven't developed cold fusion in a mason jar. They're just heirs. Just standing around with money. I'll make it rain up in here. They're just standing around with the money raining on them. And they are worth more money than 99 million Americans. Got that? So we go back to Elizabeth Alicia Greta Halfmoon, 45 years old, 6 hours worth of shopping inside the fabulous Wally World Supercenter of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Thank you for the story, Marty. Elizabeth Alicia Greta Halfmoon was broke. Oh, Bob, is this going to be one of those heartbreaking stories where she gets busted for shoplifting, trying to steal a loaf of bread so she can go home and feed her little ones? No. No.
No.
Don't worry about that. We're not going to be crying yet. Too early for Friday on the front porch crying if the gun story didn't do it for you. No, Elizabeth Alicia Greta Halfmoon, aged 45, in the fabulous Wally World Supercenter of Tulsa, Oklahoma, spent 6 hours gathering up chemicals in said Wally World Supercenter of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and proceeded to carry them into the back of the store? Where police allege she tried to set up a meth lab.
Don't!
That's what, you know, that's what meth does to your mind. It lets your brain think good ideas. It lets your brain think things that are not good ideas actually are. Hey, I can't afford any meth and I don't have any meth. Why don't I go to Wally World and steal all the stuff to make the meth and make it there in the employee lounge? Bad for your brain. Bad meth. Bad. But that's... You Are Here, 2011. One officer was taken to a local hospital for burns after the chemical she was mixing ate through his gloves. She was in the process of trying to manufacture meth, they claim. She had mixed up some starting fluid and what? Sulfuric acid. They sell sulfuric acid at the Wally World? Yeah, she was mixing a batch of sulfuric acid and starting fluid, which I think is ether, isn't it? In a bottle. And the stuff ate through the fireman's gloves, and he had to go to the hospital. Jeebus. Apparently, she has a history of being busted for the attempted manufacture of methamphetamine. Tulsa, Oklahoma, by the way, and Oklahoma being a family value state that's tough on crime. Oklahoma Stan, I guess we could probably call it. Has been the site of 1,700 meth lab busts. Not in the state. In Tulsa! Between 2002 and 2011. Between 2002 and 2005, about 3.7% of young adults in Oklahoma self-reported using meth, according to a national survey on drug use and health. Could we maybe have a greater discussion over why that is? Could we maybe have a discussion about the effects of poverty and hopelessness on the poor and undereducated? Oh, I know that's entirely too squishy for family values, personal responsibility, right-wing Americans, but it's just us, the Horn family. You know, we're all liberal and icky like that. Could we ever... Really, what happens? You know, we got terrible drug problems in Appalachia because we have children growing up in situations and circumstances that are absolutely and utterly hopeless. From the moment they cry their first at birth, they begin ingesting poisons, industrial toxins, unleashed into the atmosphere, into the water, into the very essence of their world. Because certain coal executives haven't figured out yet that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. And upon growing up, it doesn't take very long for little Timmy, little Johnny, and little Susie, and little Cindy to figure out that there ain't just a hell of a lot of future for them here in Appalachia, or for that matter, in Oklahoma Stan. Because that middle-class world that maybe Grandma talks about, or Great-Grandma, that's gone, baby, that's gone, sunshine, gone. And you know where it disappeared to? It disappeared into the wallets and the accounts and the structured finances and tax avoidance programs of six people who were standing around when the money landed on them. The Walton heirs. Richer than 99 million Americans. Well, by God, I think Bob's going to start talking about communism in a minute. Oh, hell no, I'm not. Yeah, Texas Betsy, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I'm sure they ingest the poison before they're even born. It's okay to poison the fetuses in Appalachia. As long as nobody sees them doing it. Well, or as long as we can say that it's economically necessary and coal keeps the lights on. You know, for a time yesterday, I was worried that we wouldn't have a show last night because our local power utility couldn't keep the lights on. It's a coal-fired electrical power company provider, and they talk, coal's our national number one national security energy supplier. But they couldn't keep the lights on one day after a wet snow that dropped an inch of blop on the neighborhood. The power came back. Jeebus. Are you trying to channel John Cleese reading news from Monty Python's Flight? No, not overtly, but you know what? After a while, the stuff just begins to rub off. Robert Phase 5 from the chat room says, time to throw a virgin in the volcano. About the size of it. So that's where we find ourselves as we begin this evening's Friday on the Front Porch filibobster. I've had my say. Why don't you guys have yours now? You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on. Now, if you'd like to save us a little bit of money, you can dial directly at 304-658-3333. And that way we don't rack up toll-free charges. But if that's the only way you can call in is to use the toll-free number, do so. Don't let it stop you. Okay? Okay. So here's how it works. Everybody line up the calls and stay on the line. Everybody's phone call will be taken. But I suggest you light them up now so that you're not trying to get on the air ringing in at 5 minutes until 9 Eastern time, okay? Cool. So we'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And I can report that ain't nothing rolled in the last hour, but, well, thank you for those of you who do support us. It is much needed and much appreciated. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is, in fact, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your calls are next. On The Horn.
I left Oklahoma driving in a Pontiac, just about to lose my mind. I was going to Arizona, maybe on to California, where the people all live so fine. My baby said I was crazy, my mama called me lazy, I was gonna show 'em all this time. 'Cause you know I ain't no foolin', I don't need no more schooling. I was born to just walk the line. Living on Tulsa time. My watch back to it, living on Tulsa time. I
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bad body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy, 4 minutes past the hour here, 4 minutes past 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. Hope you're enjoying the podcast if you're listening later. We've got a nice crop of blinking lights here that I... that we will move through the course of this Friday on the front porch. Email coming in from a couple of folks. Let's see. Bill says, 38 special. You mean my 2-inch 38 won't stop an A1 Abrams tank? Sorry. Them slugs going to bounce right off, Bill. What you want is a rocket launcher or a Panzerfaust. Sadly, at least according to the NRA, sadly, Americans can't own those. Or can they? I don't know. How successful has the NRA been? Bill continues, air's hell. My second wife took my money and gave me the air. Clayton says, yeah, Virgin Volcano. Been looking for one of those for 60 years. No luck yet. Good luck with that. David in Tennessee, noting for those of a research bent, if anybody wants to understand Tulsa and speed and its relationship with it, find a copy of Larry Clark's Tulsa. That's just the name of the book, Tulsa. It is the second most important book of photography that I know about, and not for the faint of heart. The foreword, written by Larry Clark, reads, "Once the needle goes in, it never comes out." Jan says, I don't agree with your ideas on guns, but I do agree with your right to feel that way. I appreciate that, Jan. I really, really do. Sincerely. This came in. This came in from Jerry earlier today. He said, after your comments about the letter W, I thought about the Braille system. Remember where I was talking about the W burger over to the Wendy's? Thing still gives me the fan tods just thinking about it. Now, Jerry says, after your comments about the letter W, I thought about the Braille system. Louis Braille invented his alphabet in France. The French alphabet has no letter W at all. So the letter W in English Braille is literally an artificial invention. It was inserted into the French Braille system to accommodate the English language. Its presence literally disrupts the normal sequence of patterns of dots. Who else inserts himself into a well-running system and then disrupts its normal patterns and sequences, huh? Jerry notes, I transcribed Braille for 5 years for public building use. It had to be accurate. I hope you find this to be as ironic as do I. I absolutely do. I get it. That's exactly what happened in 2000, in the year 2000, when a gang of five, including an alleged moderate by the name of Sandra Day O'Connor, who should go down in infamy for foisting George Bush upon us. It would have been so easy to do the right thing for her, but she didn't. She played politics instead. That gang of five thrust the W into what was at that moment a well-running system, and as Jerry notes, damned well disrupted its normal patterns and sequences. Hear, hear. So, with that having been said, to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
You did mention the 5-minute caller, but you didn't mention the 2-minute caller. 2-minute caller, you are on notice. You can't call within 2 minutes of the program.
Okay. Thank you, David. I appreciate that.
Well, we need that cleared up.
It did, and I'm glad you did. I mean, that's one of those valuable services you provide as a pop culture correspondent for The Horn.
Right.
Got to keep folks in line.
You know, when you were talking about the Muppets, that made me think of, I want to send a dupe email to Eric Bolling and make him aware of Mongrels.
Oh, dear God. And I watched some, and everything you said was true.
Wait till you, I mean, I just saw.
I got done with what I watched, and I was not a well man, and happily so.
Wait till you see one where Nelson tries to teach the lower class how to be middle class. Because Vince has him locked up in the bottom of the ground. So he brings him out and he brings him children's books. And he says, and then he said, wait a minute, you freed us from Vince? Then he goes, well, that's cool. We can pick up these books now. And he tries to make him refine, and then Vince comes back and, oh man,
that's beautiful.
Everything is just beautiful.
I'll go looking for that tonight.
And there's so many musical cues that you could play for the horn. There's the Everybody Loves a Lesbian song, which is just brilliant. Regarding the theme of lesbianism and all of that. But yeah, for people who haven't seen it, it's the show we're talking about, if you weren't listening last night, it's called Mongrels. It's a traditional type puppet show with, off the cuff, zany humor. And very, very, very edgy scenarios. Like,
not a children's puppet show.
No, definitely not. I mean,
this ain't Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
I was just, you know, my mouth was open when they have a show on cat pedophilia, and I was like, oh my god, this would fly over here. This would not fly over here.
Yeah, not even after the Squidbillies, like we were talking about.
No. I mean, to talk about the censorship that we deal in this country, you know, what was it? You cannot watch the episode of The Boondocks with Tyler Perry. They pulled it out of syndication. So, you know, semi-fascism or transparent fascism is alive and well over here.
Ain't that the truth?
And, yeah, I mean, You look at what's happening in this country, and my feelings are guns on this. When you were talking about guns earlier in the Virginia Tech, I think that for myself, I don't need a gun, but if it is absolutely necessary, and for others, I don't see how, if you were in a situation where you just wanted to scare someone off, why you wouldn't just use blanks instead. That's my personal opinion.
Well, because then if you have to shoot one, they find out it's blanks, they kill you for using the blanks and scaring the shit out of them.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is in situations where you know you're not in that type of area where someone isn't going to quote unquote shoot you, if it's just to scare someone.
Yeah. No.
You got to go to.
Well, look. I mean, if you're trying to deter people, just putting that little sign on the front door that says "This house protected by Smith and Wesson."
Mm-hmm.
That's going to do one of two things. That's either going to encourage somebody to break in your home because they can steal your guns and sell them, and you'd be surprised the number of homes that get broken into to steal the guns because they're
they have.
Firearms in this country have a liquidity that diamonds don't have, because people just go crazy. Really? That's a hell of a good bargain on that 30-06 there, Clem. Well, I'm selling it because I need the money.
Yeah, it's a tough issue.
You can hang that sign out there. That'll deter the people that really want to come in and do in the family, right?
Right.
But. Well, and then, you know, if your guns get stolen from you, then, you know, you file the insurance claim and none the wiser. I mean, the number of situations where somebody is at, where you're actually going to have a shootout at the OK Corral in your living room, there's just not a lot of them. And look at what happens. One story comes to mind. I don't know if Sandra's listening tonight, but I know her mind has already gone there. Look what happens when you take it to, I'm going to defend my home. You remember the story of the 90-year-old granny in Atlanta and the no-knock warrant where the cops came blazing through the door and, you know, they didn't say, hello, it's the police or anything. They just rammed out, and so granny started shooting, and I mean, they cut her in half, didn't they? Just shot her to pieces. So there's your home defense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I just think that in certain areas, you can't avoid it. Now, I don't know. Like I said, I think that there needs to be a clear indication of when we have gun violence like this, and severe penalties, punishments, fines, everything. It needs to be. That needs to happen, and if it doesn't happen, well, then it's just going to keep happening and happening. It's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, yeah, and look, I mean, if you're one of those folks who, you know, drives around with a Smith & Wesson bumper sticker on his pickup truck and so forth like that and such like, and, you know, the Iraq, God, I feel like Miss South Carolina, if you do that, then guess what? One of the first things when the cops have to come to your house, they ask around, hey, has this guy got a lot of guns? Good. Okay, we'll bring the whole SWAT team.
Right.
And you haven't even drawn a gun, and you've automatically escalated the situation. Whereas, no, okay, well, come peaceably. Okay, don't shoot. It's like what you do when you get pulled over on the highway, whether you're speeding or not. There are some things you do. Rule one is both hands on the steering wheel. Rule two is license and insurance and registration sitting on the dashboard so that you're not reaching down or over or anything that's going to make Officer Friendly decide to make you pine for the fjords. There's just ways that you deal with it that don't involve shooting back.
And there's definitely too much money to be involved in this whole business of everything gun related. It's gotten so out of control. I understand a lot of communities, the same way with college football, are probably funded completely by the sales of guns, ammo, and all paraphernalia included.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how easy we just let conservatives into our pop culture. I don't know if you know this, but this is going to make a lot of Simpsons fans mad, but guess who's going to be a guest on The Simpsons for a whole episode?
Ted Nugent?
Right.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. And it's, you know, it's a, like a bizarre plot, too, because it makes me think, like, for the future, Ted Nugent's going to run for president.
I snorted initially, but at this point, I don't put it beyond the... I figure he moves up to president of the NRA at some point.
Well, I mean, it's funny how somebody like that can get so easily into a TV show with their background, and you look at some of his readings.
Well, somewhere along the way, probably somebody at Radio Rwanda said to Matt Groening and that bunch, listen, you know, you've had a bunch of your liberals there on the on your little cartoon show. Isn't it time we had some fairness and balance? Can't you find no conservatives to be on the program? How about Ted Nugent? I talked to him the other day, and he said he'd love to be on your little cartoon show. Maybe he can kill Itchy or Scratchy or both of them or something.
I would like to believe that, but I think he suffers from the same thing that Seth MacFarlane suffers from, which is when he had Rush Limbaugh on the show, it's just that he thinks that because they're entertainers, that they're quote-unquote harmless or whatever. And they're like, well, we'll put them on the TV screen, and that'll make them more humane to the people, and we'll see that we'll show them that they're not that fierce. But the problem is when you make people like that harmless, that's the danger.
Yeah, and well, like I said with Nugent, one of the things that bugs me most about him is this idea that he promulgates that we can all, you know, the real gun owning Americans, they need to kill what they eat, because you know, I mean, I know because I know the people. There are folks out there with a house full of guns. Well, at least we're ready when the apocalypse comes, or at least we're ready when the big collapse comes, because I got my Glenn Beck dried food, and I got my Alex Jones high dehydrated water, just add water, and I got lots of guns, and if we have to, we'll shoot the marauders and we'll barbecue them. I ain't afraid. When everything that they're doing, everything around them says nothing but fear.
Right, right. And it is a lot of hucksterism, because here's a guy who's who calls himself a man's man, and yet he had to bow to the throne of I like Sarah Palin for president. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, that man's man, and maybe, I don't know, I've told the story before. It's documentable. It's out there.
Right.
That man's man, when his time came to serve his country.
Yeah.
That man's man went without bathing for 2 weeks, didn't change his clothes, and urinated and defecated on himself for 2 weeks, and then went to the draft board.
Right.
Where they said, well, you're obviously too crazy to go to Vietnam. And he went home and took a shower.
Well, that's the amazing thing.
And then, of course, that's a conservative. I mean, and that's not just a conservative. That's a respected conservative. That's a conservative icon. That's a paragon of conservative American values of pulling yourselves up by your bootstraps just like the patriots and the pioneers did, and killing what you eat and gnawing the bones with your teeth and shit.
That's a human events conservative who gets a column every 6 or 7 months to say something absolutely stupid. And I mean, what's amazing about it is the fact that conservatives can be the biggest bullies on the earth. Look at Ted Nugent. And as soon as you have a quote-unquote liberal bully, which we could argue about that, what a liberal bully, the definition is. But the fact that he's so able to get away with it from everyone, basically.
Yeah. And of course, at the first sign of trouble, becomes the biggest coward drawing breath. Remember when that hateful Republican voter went into the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Knoxville, Tennessee?
Right.
And in his manifesto that he wrote beforehand, he said, I'm going to kill a bunch of them because them lily-livered homosexual coddling, homosexual agenda, them liberals, they won't fight back. They'll just stand there and let me kill them. And yet, oddly enough, yeah, he killed a couple of people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what them lily-livered liberals did? Didn't not one of them have a gun.
Mm.
And they took him down. Without a gun. barehanded. Didn't beat a pulp out of him once he was on the ground. Called the cops. Cops came, took him away, tried him, convicted him. Didn't give him the death sentence because he was, you know, white. Case closed. No guns. No guns.
Yeah, I mean, it is something to think about that. Before I let other people into the corral, I just wanted to get your take on the whole everything coming undone with the World News Daily debate and Trump saying, "No, I'm not. I don't think I'm going to do this debate now."
I love it, obviously.
Yeah.
I find it incredibly humorous that the only two people he got to say yes were Dr. Newt, fizzy and delicious, and Rick Santorum, because Rick said yes.
Well, you know what's amazing about it is that who was going to host it? Ion TV. And I was listening on the radio how they were talking about how everything was just rigged as a money-making operation. And you look in Ion's background, who owns Ion, and then when they were going to air it and so forth, and who was a part of that, the fact that there was the World News Daily was sponsoring it. And it just goes on and on and on. And it's so obvious that this is all that's left of the Republican Party.
The Rents Priebus of the Imperial Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat was on one of the news programs, and he said, "I feel like I'd be committing RNC malpractice if I told people it was a good idea to go on that debate," or something along those lines. And you know what? It's proof that even 1L Michelle Bachmann is capable of learning. Oh, really? Okay, I'm not going. And Huntsman, creepy old Ron Paul. Romney was waiting. If everybody else had gone, Romney would have gone too.
Right.
But in a way, this is a manifestation of what Eisenhower said in that letter to his cousin 50 or more years ago. When his cousin was writing to him about wanting to get rid of that communist Social Security or something like that, and Eisenhower wrote back to him and said, "Listen, Buster, any political party that seeks to eliminate Social Security will cease to be a national party within a generation." And we're seeing some of that. They don't like to admit it.
Right.
And they are still very, very frightening, David, because, again, maybe this deserves further fleshing out.
Right.
But the people who are driving the freaks, who are following the occupants of the clown car, are not more than 20% of the United States electorate. But I again refer people back to Wayne B. Wheeler, who realized he didn't need a majority to get what he wanted, and what he wanted was prohibition.
Right.
He just needed a weirdo margin that would stand in that stead.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of progressives and liberals, they keep on failing to realize, that this strategy of just feeding this sliver of hardcore, of fanatics, it is so dangerous and so corrosive and so so explosive that, when you say, well, they didn't win this election or they didn't win that election, when you look at how much of the media that they control just on a day-to-day basis in terms of getting the message out, and, well, let's be honest, the complete deception and lies and complete hatred for everything that is under the banner of what you would call news. I mean, you read some of these headlines, and it's obviously they have so much contempt for their readers. You could just see them sitting in a room and be like, "Can you believe we can sell this? Holy cow."
Yeah, oh, wow. Wait till you see what the rubes are buying next.
Yeah, I mean, look at...
It's the political equivalent of Pet Air, okay?
Right,
and
right.
It's just an empty box. Pet Air, where... Oh, there it went! Marmalade, we got to get another box!
And you,
our pet air flew away.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because this happens time and time again. And, I mean, just the whole thing with the birther issue and World News Daily.
Yeah, but apparently it's Newsmax, not World Nut Daily.
Oh, it is in World Nut Daily?
Texas Betsy telling me Newsmax, not World News. Yeah.
No. Oh, right. Excuse me. I get the two confused sometimes.
Oh, Lord, I do too.
So obviously,
you know, it's like after you've eaten the brown acid, it's easy to confuse the melting walls with the breathing trees.
You know, I was just thinking of actually going to their website and having like an IP catcher just to see all of the websites to go in through there, just to see all the like the secret sites, all the Republican coordination going on. Because
speaking of coordination, let me just touch on this one and run this past you. I don't know if you've seen this developing or not.
Yeah.
But over the last two or three days, have you seen this really ugly smear job that's being done against Think Progress?
No, I haven't.
Well, talk about your coordinated attacks. A few days ago, this creepy bastard named they're after you again.
Yeah, I know. You just said it. You just gave the trigger word.
Yeah, I know. This creepy bastard a few days ago offered up a hit piece. And what's his name? Is Josh Block, ostensibly a Democrat, offered up a hit piece to a conservative writers, reporters, listserv, and what he was hustling was this, because he's really pro-Israel. You know, he wants to heap dead, burnt bodies and see veins in his teeth in Iran and all of that evil shit. And so he puts out this hit piece that Politico picked up, and now a woman named Jennifer Rubin has picked it up. And she's a blogger at the, or she's a reporter at the Washington Post. And twice this week she smeared the Center for American Progress and its bloggers, based on this Block creep's work, in which he asserts that, the Center for American Progress is anti-Israel, anti-Jew, anti-Semitic. You know the drill.
Right.
And so without even checking the guy's facts, you've got members of the for-profit 1% media who are running out there and repeating the story.
Mm.
Why? Because what the Center for American Progress actually does is they advocate for a two-state solution.
Mm-hmm.
And they have dared to write about the plight of Palestinians in Gaza and Palestinians generally. And so as a result of that, they're now anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and the full-on smear is on. And so suddenly, the Center for American Progress, via its Think Progress website, finds itself fending off attacks and allegations of anti-Semitism when they've never done anything to even earn it. But that's the thing. At this point in time, with a hot yearning, a hot sexual yearning for attacks on Iran, anyone who criticizes that idea is now an anti-Semite, anti-Israel, anti-Jew. And that's crazy.
Right.
Because, you know, there are a lot of good American Jews who don't want Israel to go to, or the United States to go to war against Iran. But, you know, there's a term that's reserved for, they get labeled self-hating Jews. Because,
right,
of course, the people doing the labeling, they have the right to declare who is which and what's what.
And you're forced into that position if you're a conservative.
But this, you know, this thing, I've just watched it over the last couple of days, just begin to swirl and pick up speed and momentum. And the idea that a so-called real reporter at a 1% for-profit media outlet like the Washington Post will just do stenography for this Josh Block jackass. Well, on the one hand, nah, it's the 1% for-profit media. On the other hand, it's still a little surprising.
Hmm.
And it's really weird to watch this thing take hold.
It's it's so obvious that the for-profit media and aspects of the corporate media, they want the they want us going at each other. They want the liberals completely unarmed and toothless. Even when we're growing teeth, they want to take those teeth out.
Well, exactly, exactly.
And you know, that's just I don't have a an answer for that. I mean, my only answer is just like places like you know, here comes the gratuitous plug, and places like the Head On Radio Network, and just to keep the word out and the message, and to just to keep the lines of communication open, and that's and then you play the waiting game, and hopefully you can grow from there. But you know, nothing's guaranteed.
Well, that's the truth. That's the truth. I mean, it's been, you know, a tough October, tough November, looking shaping up to be a tough December, and you play and hope.
You just got to keep going from month to month and look at the liberals in history and the progressives throughout history and look what they had to deal with and.
But you know, we won't tender any apologies because by God we're here. We are here. We are still here.
And the other thing is you're
older than Air America and still here.
That's the important thing, to be still here. And all you're really doing is you're giving your opinion, and you're leaving the door open for conversation and discussion. And the fact that so many people want to shut that down, that is really really revealing in all of its glory.
Well, it's a little more than a little frustrating, and you know, we've been hacked. We've been attacked here, you know, on the premises. Vehicles sabotaged, jack rocks thrown in the driveway. But you know, ain't nobody running away, you know.
Right, you have to keep doing it until it's your turn to pass that torch. That's what I would say to everybody who's in it for the long haul, is you have to look forward to the next generation that's coming up, because they're waiting for you.
You know, that's actually kind of inspiring, David. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's something to think about. I mean, the fact that you look at through history and you look at these small conclaves of whether it was culture or education, and the fact that people who were completely ridiculed and embarrassed and put through the ringer, so to speak, of well, you're crazy, you're stupid, and just all of that, you don't have any money, haha, and all of that, and just to constantly, you know, as time marches on, to come out of it and see that it had its own chain reaction. And that's what I would say to a lot of people who are in that boat, is that once again, those people are just waiting for you to pass that torch. That's the way you have to look at it.
And you don't necessarily get to know who that is.
No, you don't.
Or who they are. You just have to know that you have to set them up and knock them down every day. You have to keep at it. You can't give up. You can't get disheartened. You can't get... everybody needs a break. Everybody needs a vacation. But you can't just walk away from the field. It's like, you know, the business with Green 960 in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
What will people do once they get screwed? And where is the limousine liberal who will step up and fund a new progressive voice for the San Francisco market? And if no one does, who will step up and be that voice? You know, I'm not trying to aggrandize myself, David, by any stretch of the imagination, and getting run off by corporate interests in the fifth smallest radio market in America.
Right.
Is not exactly, you know, well, I've been there. You know, you can't do that, and I would certainly never say that to any of the lineup there that was on that station. But the fact of the matter is, thanks to Boss Man Wayne and the original genius of his beloved wife, Gina,
mm-hmm.
when we got thrown off the air, we didn't say, well, that was fun, that's over, enough already, we tried, goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne doesn't know how to quit. Wayne doesn't know the meaning of give up. So when that happened, Wayne said, screw it, Can we just do this on the internet?
Right.
And I said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, Ben's been streaming us and podcasting us and everything. Yeah, we can do this. And he said, find out what we got to do to do this. We ain't quitting. Screw Beckley. You're going global. And that's, and that, I mean, in a very tiny nutshell, that's how the horn was born. And so the question, you know, and we're, you know, maybe I don't say it often enough, David, but we're living in the future. If you're listening to the horn, you're listening in the future.
Right.
Even with the latency of the internet, you're still listening in the future because you're listening to what will be reality 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now. This is what the future looks and, well, okay, not looks, it's radio. This is what the future sounds like, David.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess people are going to have to get used to the whole contribution process. And I think you'll get more people to turn around as tragic as this is when times start getting rougher and rougher and rougher, and when they start realizing that you are that beacon, the horn is that beacon that needs to continue. And that's just the way, you know, how it works here, especially in America. That's how we just, when it's really, really at the wire, we start to wake up and go, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, Agnes just snuck back here into the studio and said, oh, is that David from Maine? I said, yeah. And she goes, well, tell David I said hi. Hey to Agnes.
Hi to Agnes as well.
Yeah. Hey, David, it's been a great conversation. You have yourself a wonderful weekend, all right, brother?
All right, you too, Bob.
All right, and bye now.
All right.
Our pop culture correspondent, God, I can't think how long David's been. Yeah, a lot of years. So much so with so many of you. And we are, you know, we have real elements of, I don't know, what do you call it, future family? Yeah.
Hello?
Hello. Welcome to the program.
This is Juanita.
Oh, hey, Juanita. How are you?
Let me turn this off. I wasn't expecting. I got disconnected one time, and I thought, well, it'd be a long time before I get on. It was my computer. It was overloaded with stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I know what it's like to have a sick computer. This one's
a few little things to say. First of all, I saw your governor, ex-governor, on C-SPAN the other day.
Oh, Blanche Manchin?
Yeah. And he got a new friend.
Doesn't he have great hair?
Republican?
Oh, has he found him a Republican friend?
Yeah.
How sweet.
I don't know who he is, but he's a little guy. He's young, kind of young. And he said they made the announcement that we're doing what Obama wants us to do. We're being bipartisanship, and we're voting against the, you know, that payroll thing. Because we don't want to mess the Medicare, I mean, Social Security.
So oh, God. Yeah, that thing's been going, well, it'll mess up Social Security. No, it won't. No, it won't.
But anyway, I thought you'd get a kick out of that. He's got him a buddy, and they're being bipartisan.
Well, we all need a friend, don't we? And you know, frankly, it's not at all surprising that Joe would find himself a good repig-licking friend, Juanita, because
yeah, right.
The only Democrat Joe Manchin or any member of the Manchin family has ever voted for has had the last name of Manchin. They are a party unto themselves. They'd like to be Republicans if they could just get away with it.
Wouldn't it be nice if somebody would say, hey, Joe, how do you like, is that his name?
Yeah. I don't think he responds well to Blanche.
What do you think about mountaintop removal?
Oh, no, no, that's been asked of him. He'd say, well, what we've got to have is balance. We've got to have some balance. And, you know, mountaintop mining, because you can't get him to say mountaintop removal, mountaintop mining is an important economic engine of prosperity for West Virginia. And that's what I'm all about, is balance.
Yeah.
I've heard it so many times I can repeat it in my sleep, and that's why I keep a bucket by the bed, because after I repeat it, I have to throw up.
And I want to say something about Newt.
That's Dr. Newt to you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he's a doctor, you know. He's a post-hole digger. He's a doctor. Yes, sir, that's Dr. Newt.
Okay.
I like to call him Dr. Newt, Juanita, just because it sounds like really the nastiest beverage you ever heard of in your life. Dr. Pepper's one thing, but Dr. Newt? you know, it's like Dr. I have news.
You know, one thing that kind of bothers me is I remember after 9/11 and Netanyahu, you know, head of Israel, he was over, he was on C-SPAN, and he said, oh, I want to meet Newt, and I want to talk to Newt. He admires him. Do you think...
Oh, that's just gross.
Do you think he might give him some money to win? Because, I mean, he really...
Well, technically that's illegal, but maybe...
Yeah, but I mean, have you ever seen Newt do anything legal?
Oh, I'm not going to wait for David to mail it in. I'm going to tell you, you just earned your toaster right there. You got tonight's toaster, Juanita.
Okay. Well,
have you ever known Newt to do anything legal? That's just beautiful.
Yep. Him and Sarah, they both can lie like a rug, too. But of course, pretty much all the Republicans do. But I think sometimes they're more obvious. But speaking about Israel and accusing people of being anti-Jewish, what about when they talk about Soros? Shouldn't we say, hey, you must be anti-Jewish?
Well, no, that doesn't count for George Soros because he's the devil.
Yeah, but we can say
he's the devil. Right.
We can say it.
We can. But they just respond, well, you know, he's a liberal. He's the devil.
But... Yeah.
I just wish that George Soros did one tenth of what he's accused of doing.
I know.
Because you know, if he did, we could probably pay bills here.
I know.
Might have some roof fixing money and so forth.
Tell me about it.
Well, I say that because I know you've been down that road.
I'm still down that road.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, and you ain't moved.
I know. But, you know, that made me think about something I read in our local newspaper. We got one new newspaper in the county. They call them paper with a heart. And they do help out a lot of people who are in dire straits. And sometimes you think you're in dire straits, but believe me, there's other people a lot worse off. So this little young lady, she was mentally handicapped, and all she was getting was like a couple of $100 a month, and she had two children.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them had to go to the doctor almost all the time. It was something, I don't know what was wrong, but anyway, and then the other one, you know, she had trouble getting them to school. And sometimes she'd have to choose between taking the one to the doctor and not taking either one of them to school. And so somebody from somewhere gave her a car, and they told her that it had issues. Well, she found out the one issue was that it had a hole in the gas tank.
I know how to fix those now.
And she went to see about getting it fixed, and it was going to cost her a ton of money. And so she would just kind of guess, you know, so she wouldn't run out of gas. She would kind of guess what she could do. Well, finally, somebody from the school was noticing about the children not being in school much. And they got in touch with her, and then they proceeded, you know, to get in touch with the paper and other people, and they got her gas tank fixed. So I was thinking about, there's a lot of people like that. They think, you know, not just Ruth, but they've got all kinds of things. A lot of people are falling apart. And you think about it.
Well, that's the whole thing with the 99% is that
yes, right.
We do have those things, and it's everybody, and we are all in the kittle together.
Right.
While you know, while the 1% eat their lobster lunches, and I don't know, peasant under glass or whatever it is that they prefer.
Her store just touched my heart, you know.
Well, I mean, imagine that. Yeah, that is.
Yeah. I've had to drive beat up old cars and stuff, you know, and had all kind of things go wrong. One woman I knew, she was driving along and her gas tank fell off.
I've actually been in a car when that happened.
That's some of the some of the horror stories about cars.
Oh, and yeah, there's an abundance of them. And remember that, I mean, because I'm just gobsmacked by that number, Juanita. Six Walton heirs who have never done a blessed thing to earn a nickel in their lives.
Oh, yeah.
Have more money than 99 million Americans put together, of which you and I are, and probably the vast majority of the Horn family, are a part.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And you know, I mean, supposedly this is a country that values hard work, right? You know, because you're going to work hard and lift yourself up by your bootstraps, and the rising tide's going to lift all boats and all of that right-wing crap they're so fond of, Juanita.
Uh-huh.
And there stands six people who have never worked hard, have never known a day's want, who are what they are simply by the accident of birth.
Yeah, right.
And I, you know, and to me, steeped in Americanism, that violates the fundamental tenets of everything I ever learned that it meant to be an American.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Because how can 99 million people work hard and pull themselves up by their bootstraps when six of them have more money than they do? It's not envy, it's not jealousy, it's math. How are you going to get that out of them?
Down here, you have to have transportation to work. There's never a job, you know, close to where you live as a rule, and you've got to get to work. And sometimes people just can't do it. I've been without vehicle, you know, and I've had, depend on the kindness of people. Sometimes they weren't nobody around like that, you know, and I've walked to work. I've done, you know, did all kinds of stuff. I rode a bicycle for one job. It was for a long time. Wish I'd have kept it up almost, but, you know, for the exercise. But I just, you know, it's, they just don't, I guess they're born without it. Capacity to understand. Now you take like people like Robert Kennedy and John. Those people had a feeling, and Ted, they had a feeling for other people. But that is,
well, and yes, they were born to wealth too. But they,
right?
They were born to wealth and a profound sense of social obligation.
Yeah, but see that the others are not. They're just not like that. And we have to understand they live in a world of their own. You know.
And to understand why right wingers are the way right wingers are, and conservatives are the way conservatives are, I got an article I got an internet yesterday from Reverbo. You remember how Ted Stevens said, "I got an internet." You'll find it over at Salon, and I think you'd enjoy reading it, Juanita, and so would everybody else. Salon.com, S-A-L-O-N.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
And the name of the article by Gary Camilla is "The Infantile Style in American Politics," and it's subheaded, "The GOP Has Reverted to a Pre-Potty-Trained State. A 50-year-old essay explains why." And what it does is it examines the work of Richard Hofstadter, who wrote extensively on why right-wing conservative weirdos are right-wing conservative weirdos way back in the 50s and early 60s. And nothing's changed. And so this is like required reading homework. Because I guess maybe some of us read it as somewhat of a shock. But it's a shock because so many of us have not seen it in action before, or have not seen it so out and in the open. But when you take this article and you read it, you realize that the teabaggers are nothing new, Juanita. They're just the same old right-wing paranoid cranks recycled with fresh marketing. And then you begin to understand why we have been on this slow slide toward decay and devolution. And it's because of them.
Yeah, of course. Beth, you know, how many times have you heard them say, you know, that, well, Lyndon Johnson's plans just didn't work out, the fight against poverty. Well, they didn't let it work out.
Yeah, didn't have
they
much.
They followed it every step of the way. But there were some things that worked out beautifully.
Yeah.
Medicare, for one thing.
Well, if they'd let it, you know.
Yeah, well, it was a beautiful thing, you know, up until 1980. Then it got all those code things, you know, and...
Right, and that was done...
...would only get paid so many days for such and such a disease.
And that was done for one reason and one reason only. Or, okay, two. Every time I say one thing, there's always a second one behind it. You know how that works?
Yeah.
It was done for two reasons. One... because they realized that was a camel's nose under the tent kind of thing, and if they could start then, slowly but surely, they could kill it. Okay?
Yeah.
So it was one thing. It was two political things. It was, one, to make it less efficient and less effective, and two, to begin the process of slowly killing it.
Yeah.
And it's because it was what they want. They've hated it from the moment it was passed.
Yeah.
I mean, listen to this. Just let me share this with you, Juanita, because I think it's going to resonate with you. This is from that article I was talking about. And the article references the work of Richard Hofstadter, who wrote an article called The Paranoid Style in American Politics. And so the article at Salon by Gary Camilla says, the paranoid style in American politics devotes relatively little space to analyzing why Americans have been repeatedly drawn to such beliefs. Beliefs like, Hofstadter boils down the elements of contemporary right-wing thought to three elements. Fear of a government conspiracy to undermine free capitalism, to bring the economy under the central government, and to pave the way for socialism or communism. The belief that government has been infiltrated by sinister un-American traitors, and the belief that large swaths of the country, including the media and schools, are also in on the plot. Now, you are, as we like to say around here, of a certain age, Juanita. You remember when they were going off about this mm-hmm. I mean, you've heard it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So he continues, the paranoid style in American politics devotes relatively little space to analyzing why Americans have been repeatedly drawn to such beliefs. He notes that modern right-wingers, and this is a quote from the old article, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, modern right-wingers feel dispossessed. America has been largely taken away from them and their kind. The old American virtues have already been eaten away by cosmopolitans and intellectuals. The old competitive capitalism has been gradually undermined by socialist and communist schemers. The old national security and independence have been destroyed by treasonous plots, having as their most powerful agents not merely outsiders and foreigners, but major statesmen seated at the very centers of American power. Doesn't that sound like a teabagger?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is something that was written during the Eisenhower administration.
Of course, you know that I remember we would get letters... from, I don't know from where, but accusing Eisenhower of being a communist.
Yeah, well, that was the John Birch Society. That was Robert Welch Jr.
It was John Birch. I didn't know. You know, I was a kid. I didn't know.
Yeah, the John Birch Society constantly howled that Eisenhower was a commie.
And it wasn't the only one they called a commie either, but, you know...
No, but to give you an
remember him because he was a Republican.
But to give you an idea of the staying power of that lunacy, I can remember as a young man, a teenager, when I was first getting my start in radio, we all had a big laugh about this piece of dreck that was run on a radio station in my hometown every day. And it was called, and you know, it was all done with an ominous voice, it was called The Alan Stang Report.
The what?
The Alan Stang Report. S-T-A-N-G. Alan Stang.
That sounds familiar.
And he was this creepy old John Bircher, and it was a production of the John Birch Society. And Juanita, what I'm trying to get across here is that this was happening in 1979 in Alabama. Okay, 1979. just 32 little years ago, not quite a generation, when what Hofstadter's writing about was going on in the mid-50s, by 1979 it was still going strong and being aired every day in Northwest Alabama. And everybody, you know, it was before the election of Ronald Reagan, and I heard Alan Stang proclaim that Ronald Reagan was a stooge of the commies.
Oh boy.
Okay, everybody but them were commies, and socialists and anarchists, and it would always end with the dark voice of Alan Stang saying, "Until tomorrow, this is Alan Stang. Think about it."
Well, you know,
it didn't take much thinking, Juanita, because the minute it was over, man, that man's crazy.
Well, they had a thing going around the schools, you know, like when Charles was first started, you might know something about it, saying that, like, that, you know, had the new mask back then.
Oh, yeah, that was communist.
That was communist. And also the metric system they were talking about, and that was communist. What they said, well, the parents and their children won't be able to communicate, and that's the way communism does. You know, and there was a lot.
Oh, I remember. I remember when there was an uproar in my school. Again, Alabama, so, you know, grain of salt. But I remember when there was an uproar in my school because we were being taught the metric system.
That's right.
And I remember, it wasn't just Alabama. There was a national uproar. Well, that's going to lead to communism, you know.
Yeah.
What happens when the metric system hit? How much will a dollar be worth in the metric system? Oh!
It's all kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I saw all of that, I thought, my gosh, what is going on? I didn't know it was a brainwashing startup or maybe continuation.
But I don't know how long that Alan Stang report went on.
I'd look that up online and see if it's on. S-T-A-N-G?
Yeah, Alan Stang.
I've heard that name.
Well, no, there was an Arnold Stang who was a TV comedy guy.
I know, he was, yeah.
Yeah, different guy.
Yeah. Only one more thing I want to tell you about Newt. Did you know that he's here to save our civilization?
Every day in his own mind, right?
He says it.
He's going to be the...
And
we can put up one of those Julius Caesar statues that says common savior of mankind, but that's not going to play well with the Jesus folks.
I think it's beyond Julius Caesar. I know Charles said that too about Julius Caesar, but I said I think it's beyond that. I think it's something like a messiah of what he thinks he is.
I know, but can't... go ahead.
He said that a person like him... He said this about himself now. A person like him comes along once every 200 or 300 years to save mankind. So, what do you think about them apples?
Too early to start drinking. Well, do you know the story, Juanita, of Newt's idea cabinet?
About that Bolton?
No. That would be his presidential cabinet. This is his idea cabinet. Newt's idea cabinet. It turns out the RNC, as remember when Newt was Speaker of the House and he was getting himself in trouble because he was dirtier than if he'd been dipped in mud. Well, as his grip was slipping on the Speaker of the House position, and this is, you know, back in the late 90s, the Republican National Committee had a big four-drawer file cabinet, and the label on it said Newt's Ideas. All right. Next to the four-drawer file cabinet that said Newt's Ideas was an empty manila envelope that was stapled to the wall and written on that was Newt's Good Ideas. And that, you know, that's Newt. You know, Newt has a million ideas a day, and one half of 1% of them are, you know, good.
Well, that's the...
Oh, and by the way, Patty has written in to say there is a whole lot of Alan Stang out there. Okay. Yeah, she just searched Alan Stang report on Google and came up with a just more than you'd probably ever want to hear. So, yeah, you'll find it if you go look. And Alan Stang Crazy. No, the crazy part. I added that.
But you were talking about why people believe in things that is so much from church.
Juanita, I think your phone is, or your computer's getting sick. Yeah, there it went. Maybe she was Googling. I don't know. Let's keep things rolling here. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm chewing, Bob. This is Richard.
Well, what's for dinner, Richard? Did I catch you? Pardon?
You know, this is reminding me of when, who's our guy in North Dakota?
Oh, Bob?
Yeah. Who I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Tell me about chewing. You know, you're not supposed to chew on the air. I'm doing it.
No. Well, only you, Richard.
well, he did. You know, Bob used to do this. He would call up Malloy, and you know, he'd be on hold, so he'd start eating. You know, and
yeah.
Malloy would pick him up, and he would say, "I'm eating chicken," and Malloy would explode and say, "Don't call me when you're eating chicken." Hang up on him.
Yeah. Should I call you when I'm eating ribs? I mean, no.
Yeah, right. So,
sorry, I caught you in mid bite. You know, that's how life on hold goes. I mean,
yes. Well, then he called back and he said, "I'm eating cheese." You know, don't call me when you're eating cheese. So, anyway, I've been listening. I'm having a hard time getting through to horn anything with my computer now.
Well, we were anything horn was way down last night. I mean, the servers crashed all the way down to the ground.
Well, no, I mean for the last few weeks. I'm using an old computer. It's one of these oldies but goodies, you know, an industrial strength Dell that's at least 10 years old.
Oh dear.
And you know, Windows XP, and I've got another computer that's a bit newer and more powerful, but I haven't made the conversion yet. So and this is going to continue to be my beater because it's a real good machine. But I'm using an older version of Firefox, and I'm using a not current version of Internet Explorer, which
and you know what you're describing there, Richard, is exactly why when we built the horn, we built several different streams.
Well, I can't get any streams off White Rose anymore.
You can't get the modem stream?
Nope.
Because that thing's 16K. I mean, you can listen to that on dial-up.
I'm getting weird errors, and, you know, I can't get the high-speed. You know, I have high-speed service, and I can't get any Malloy programs that are newer than over a year old. On your site, I can't get through to the chat room.
Nobody can. No, I don't know why. Our front door to the chat room is busted, and that's why John had to install a side door.
I can't even get that to work. However, it's nice the telephone works. So.
Yeah, and what's probably going on is because the computer is that old, Richard.
Yeah.
It probably won't run a sufficiently recent version of Java to let you into the chat.
You know, I'm not sure. It was doing okay until maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, and then no. But I'll work on it. I'm so fed up with having to buy new computers and a new operating system and then a new computer to go with the operating system and then, you know, on and on and on. I'm just disgusted with it. I can't stand it anymore. And I can't afford it anymore. So I'm thinking of Linux right now.
You know what? That machine would probably run Linux very nicely if you have the patience to learn it.
I do. It must have been 15 or 20 years ago. I had a friend who was working for a Unix training company. And he called me up one day and said, how would you like to take the Unix class for free? I said, I'm on.
Oh, heck yeah.
And I did, and I loved it. I really did. I mean, it was like it was like the DOS batch file language with all the blinders taken off, you know. Very, very nice.
Well, you know, I mean, it's out there, like things like, what, Ubuntu?
Yeah.
And your machine would probably take right off and run with it. Of course, we are way deep into the weeds of inside computer baseball, so we might ought to move on to something that doesn't make people's eyes roll back in their heads.
Meaning what?
Well, I mean, that's probably not why you called, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. I just want to mention, for anybody who's interested, that I have about 100 programs on this machine, and every single one of them is free software, with the exception of the entire MS Office suite, industrial strength Microsoft Office suite, and the operating system, Windows XP. So you can do what I'm saying is you can do it. You don't have to buy into Microsoft.
No, I mean, as far as documents, you know, Google Docs, all of that.
Yeah,
has largely replaced Microsoft Office and things like that. Open Office works just fine.
Open Office is so impressive. I got it at version 1, you know, and I looked at it and I put it through its paces and boy, this is good. It was all rough around the edges and it was a good piece of work. Anyway, let me move on and ask you what happened to Green 960 you mentioned.
It was announced that, I guess, at the beginning of the year, they're going to become, they're not going to be Green 960 anymore. All the liberal progressive programming is bye-bye, except for, I think, Randy Rhodes.
Well, I guess, I think that's what you get when you throw in your lot with Clear Channel, who owns it.
Right. And it was a Clear Channel decision.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they had, what was this woman's name, who was on there? Mike Malloy went out to for dinner with her, a local person. She was very good. And what they did, of course, was they killed her show to make room for Mike Malloy. Well, anyway, so, no, I didn't know about that. I do not listen to commercial radio, even though I used to be in radio and I read advertisements all the time. I cannot stomach listening to an ad at all, you know.
Because it just what makes you want to scream. I mean, you just feel like your eardrums are being assaulted, or
it's just my brain goes dead. It's, you know, I don't shop in stores where they play advertising because I can't handle it. It just, you know, it makes my brain go dead, and there's no purpose to a lot of it. You know, it's just a lot of words. They're not even selling anything. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
You know,
it's just like those commercials where you have to wonder what the hell it is they're well, you don't watch them, so, but no, there's a whole universe of commercials where you have to wonder what it is the hell they're selling until you get to the end of the commercial,
if it's even there, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff that they play in stores is just pablum, you know. It's like welcome to Kroger's, you know, this is the great store and blah blah blah, and they're not even selling anything. This is wasting your brain. Anyway, let me move on to something. David, I don't remember who brought it up. I think it was David from Maine. This Israel business is really, really serious. I come from a Jewish background, so I want to address it. I think that we need a way to fight back against the professional Zionists. We cannot buy into their vocabulary and their knee-jerk accusations, you know, of A, self-hating Jew, if you happen to be Jewish, and B, anti-Semitic, if you make the slightest little peep critical of Israel or even raise the question.
And that's exactly what's going on here. And this isn't, you know, this smear job coming out from this, what was his name, Josh... Josh Block. This didn't happen accidentally. It didn't just happen to happen when it's happening. This is happening as a means of trying to quash and quell and stifle any discussion of what is very obviously a covert dirty war being waged against Iran at this point.
Well, see, what I want to talk about is not the issue. That's the issue. I want to talk about their MO. You know, so I think that it's not so important to get to engage with them about the content of what they're attacking. I think what's important to focus on is how they operate. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And tackle that, because they've been at this for decades. This is nothing new. An example, in Berkeley, there was a newspaper called the Berkeley Daily Planet. There was a lot of letters coming in, you know, people pro and con about Israel, and these people were just vicious about stifling any discussions at all. They went around to the advertisers and stopped people from advertising. The paper died.
Yeah, well, and that is their MO. And it is malicious, it is vicious, and the only way to possibly oppose it is to stand up and punch them in, metaphorically speaking, of course, punch them in the nose.
Well, I think that we need...
You know, a good dose of how dare you works.
Yeah, but, you know, they'll fight against that, too. I mean...
Well, they'll fight against anything. I know you don't want to talk about the issue itself, but they will fight against anything because they are trying to create the existential space for their issue to succeed.
That's right.
Bloodthirsty asshats want World War III to get started in the Middle East. As much as, I mean, and he's not Jewish, and he's not, I don't think, anything you could call pro-Israel or APAC-y or anything like that. But for instance, bless his heart, I love him to pieces, but Bart Kopp says, you know, a year ago, if we would have just blown up some oil platforms, by God, they'd have gotten the message in Iran. And I thought, you know, I mean, I know there are people who think that way, but God damn, Richard, you know, all we got to do is look at the map. You know, Straits of Hormuz, anybody? Because we know what weapon systems they have. And they've told us what they'll do. They'll close the Straits of Hormuz. Quite possibly with the corpses of a couple of our multi-billion-dollar aircraft carriers.
Oh, yeah.
And it won't take much to make the Straits of Hormuz unnavigable. And so then what happens? Well, then the entire oil industry pretty much chokes to death. You know, no garbage in, no garbage out.
Yeah. I think... Well, I don't know. You notice how they've gotten Obama under their control.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they stopped him. Remember, the first time he engaged with them was over the settlements, way back in the early days of his administration, and he backed away. Of course, he's very good at backing away. You know, he backed away from Fox, too.
Oh, I know. Well, there's been a whole lot of backing away, like backing away from Plan B and so forth. But, Richard, you can only run, you know, when you're dealing with AIPAC and that crowd, you can run, but you can run, but you can't hide. And the only response, like I said, the only response to that cry of anti-Semite, you know, anti-Israel is to how dare you them and scream at them a little bit because God knows they've got some screaming coming. I mean, I'm not. Hell, I'm halfway to being a Hebraophile. Not.
I know.
But that doesn't mean that I have to sit and just rubber stamp whatever it is that Israel wants to compel our government to sanction. I am personally embarrassed by the fact that little itsy-bitsy Israel has more sway over our nation than does, oh, I don't know, viable countries like England and France and Japan.
Indeed. And maybe we should just make them the 51st state and subject them to our Constitution.
With the exception of the fact that Israel is an outlaw rogue regime at this point in time, they kind of are, aren't they?
You know,
I mean, we send as much or more money to Israel than we do to some states, right?
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed, and of course, I still can't say that I understand the backstory to all this. Israel behaves well, especially Netanyahu. You know, he's a psychopath. The fact is, to me, that they goad the Palestinians into acts of desperation and then start screaming, look what they're doing to us. You know?
Yeah.
Back them into the corner. Well, they can, you know, like an animal being, you know. You back a cat into the corner, the cat's going to strike back. Going to use whatever tools it manages to have. And I think that's what the Palestinians have done. And you know, they've been placed in that position. And the arrogance of, you know, attacking these little flotillas that come.
And because it's a classic example, Richard, of that old saying that when all of your problems look like nails, all of your solutions will look like hammers.
Look hammers. Here's a quote I want to read. That happened after the first... You know, after they attacked the first little flotilla, this was an official statement out of a, you know, Israel government spokeswoman. And she said, and when our Navy had to intercept, our young servicemen were attacked with live ammunition. They were shot at with knives and with clubs.
When did, what? Huh?
Should I read that again?
No, I got... So, she lives in... This individual lives in a complete fantasy world, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. By the way, I have to point something out to you. This was just noted in the chat room. If Israel became a state, they'd only get 2 senators. As it is, they've damn near got 50.
Who said that?
That was Lottie.
Lottie, thank you. That's very good.
And Jan from Vegas in the chat room, why not have quarters made for Israel? You know, the state quarters, you know, Vermont, West Virginia, Alabama,
yeah,
California.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not just do an Israel quarter? What the hell?
Well, you know, you look at the behavior of Israel, you look at the behavior of the United States relative to Israel, going, you know, back, what, to 1950, God knows what, and you wonder, what the hell is the backstory? You know, if you look at the Middle East in general and all our finagling and, you know, event after event, which you look at and you go, huh? You know, it's like...
Well, we were largely staying out, about as American involvement in the Middle East got was, what's his name, Lowell Thomas going to cover the campaigns of T.E. Lawrence of Arabia. But then can we do this little history moment, Richard?
Sure.
In the mid-20s, you know, following the Second World War, or First World War, following the First World War, there was an agreement made to put the Hashemites on the throne. And so they were given Saudi Arabia, they were given what became what was referred to as the Transjordan, and they were given Iraq. And they were screwed, okay? They didn't get half of what they were promised. It was a total ripoff.
You mean the Hashemites didn't, or?
Yeah, the Hashemites didn't.
Yeah, okay, got it.
So, along about the middle of the 1920s, if I recall correctly, and I stand to be corrected if not, and God knows this, you know, the Horn family, hey, you screwed that one up, Bob. But for some reason or another, we backed a coup in which the House of Ibn Saud overthrew the House of Hashemi. And that was the beginning of our cozy little relationship with the Saudi royal house that persists today. And it facilitated the creation of something called Aramco, which was the Arab American Oil Company.
I'm familiar with them.
Okay, so fast forward a little bit. We get through the Second World War. Britain has always felt paternal about the Middle East. You know, in 1920, you get the Balfour Declaration, which is steeped in not just geopolitics, but history and religion as well. calling for the creation of a Jewish state. And the best book I've ever read on it is Barbara Tuchman's Bible and Sword. Excellent book. So you've got the Balfour Declaration hanging out there. Israel gets created in 1948. Ugly, ugly, nasty, nasty. And that turned everything on its ear. And by ugly, ugly, nasty, nasty, I mean the way that it happened and all the violence that attended it. You know, let's remember one of the earliest manifestations of terrorism was done by, what were they called? The Irgun, who were Zionist terrorists inside British Palestine. They blew up the King David Hotel. Menachem Begin was one of them, and he went on to head the Israeli state. But then in the early 1950s comes the real deal breaker. And that is when, at Britain's behest, Winnie Churchill had asked Harry Truman to do it. Harry Truman left office and said no. And then Churchill went to his old buddy Eisenhower and said, really, we've got to...
Really, really, Ike, old boy. We've got to get rid of this little wog who thinks that the Persians own the Persian oil. Now, we can't do it ourselves, you know, Britain being Britain and everything, because we've got an oil company down there, you understand. Bring me another brandy and a cigar, boy. So what happens is Winston Churchill persuades Eisenhower to support a coup to overthrow the democratically elected prime minister of Iran, whose name was Mohammad Mossadegh.
Right.
It succeeds. Mossadegh is put in chain and under house arrest for the remainder of his natural-born life, and nobody seems to remember that when the American embassy was stormed by the students in 1979... they weren't just carrying big pictures of Ayatollah Khomeini. They were also carrying pictures of Mohammad Mossadegh. And Mohammad Mossadegh was a little bit religiously insane, but not great big religiously insane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in his oust, it was because of his ouster that the United States then put on the so-called peacock throne the son of a guy who had been, I don't know, a horse boy to the previous ruler, and his name was Reza Pahlavi, and he styled himself the Shah.
My grandmother hated him. I don't know who she hated more. It was either him or it was whoever the Saudi guy was. I think it was King Saud. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all of the stage dressing that is still deviling us in 2011.
It's reverberating, and there's so much we do not know about this place. You know, I've watched three Iranian movies in the last few years. You know, my library's got them, and they're really great to watch. You know, it gives you a whole other perspective on this place. I mean, Iran is a big country.
It's a big country with big problems.
Well,
I mean, it has real economic issues that extend even beyond what beset it when we froze its assets and yada yada yada.
Right.
And all the economic sanctions that have been imposed upon it. It has big problems that it needs to remedy. One of the arguable reasons for having a nuclear program is so that it's not burning its own oil to meet its energy needs, and can therefore put it on the world market. Now, if it was me, and that's really, really why you want a nuclear program, so you can put more of your oil on the world market, you know, I think it would be smart to send some wind and solar consultants over there. Now, I realize that's Pollyanna, because Iran is crazy, and Iran wants to blow up the world, and Iran hates Jesus and Moses, too, and Iran hates your mother, and the apple pies that she bakes on the 4th of July. Iran hates everything. Iran hates God.
You know, let me put another window on this. Iran has three cities that have subways, and those subways were built by the Chinese.
Sure.
That's sobering, you know?
Israel doesn't have any subways.
Do they not?
No. Not that I know of.
And Marty pointing out to me that Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israel ain't.
Yeah.
Because Israel won't admit, but well. And why should Iran admit to wanting nuclear weapons? And this is, I'm just asking this question academically.
Well,
Israel won't admit to having nuclear weapons, and they've damned well got a bunch of them.
Oh, definitely.
So, well, you know, in the issue of Iran and the nuclear thing, it's the same with Pakistan, it's the same with India. There is an overarching thing in the world that says white cultures, or cultures deemed to be white Christian cultures, and we won't, you know, we just sort of adopted Israel. White cultures can be trusted with the nuclear genie out of the bottle, but don't let those brown ones get it, because they're wild, they're savages! Never mind the fact that the word Aryan comes from the races that descended into Persia and became the Medes and the Persians. I mean, that's all confusing there.
Yeah, well, we have this hypocrisy problem here.
Well, yeah, but it is fundamentally, Richard, racist. We can't, brown people can't be trusted with the bomb. White people can. And when you get down to that level, it really becomes eye-opening. I've pointed out a number of times, and I have yet to hear anybody successfully refute this. If you look at, if you look at that map, that really, really inconvenient map, if you look at the map, Richard, it's all right there. You've got nuclear Pakistan, who really is precarious because there really are religious crazies there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got the bomb. And they're bordering Iran, and Pakistan's version of religious insanity hates Iran's version of religious insanity. And Iran's version of religious insanity hates Pakistan's version of religious insanity. And then there's India. And Iran hates them, Pakistan hates them, they did, right? World's biggest democracy. Well, that's a recipe for disaster. Democracies, you know, remember, a so-called democracy is the only one ever to have actually used a nuclear device on another country. And then you've got the Saudis, who, King Whackbottom, or whatever his name is, needs only pick up the phone and will happily just deliver a nuclear strike anywhere that, you know, where it's like,
well,
it's like FedEx with the bomb with us and the Saudis. And then there's the joker in the deck, which is Israel, which has, I mean, I heard about this on a drive that I took last year. I was deep in the night and driving through the heart of Tennessee and was actually listening to a radio program out of Chicago. And I heard about this philosophical debate that's taking place in Israel that says a retaliatory nuclear strike is pointless. Because at that time, by that time you've been nuked, but you can't really prove anything. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe there's some sane people in Israel. And the guy follows up and says, so what they're thinking is they need a first strike.
Well, I can assure you that there are some sane people in Israel.
Well, I know there are. And frankly, to sort of come full circle to the issue you raised, it is absolutely fascinating that in Israel, you can be more critical of the right-wing, out-of-control, rogue state government there than you can be in the United States. I mean, the pro-peace, pro-Palestinian, pro-two-state solution movement inside Israel is far more vocal, far more vociferous than it is over here, because some little congressman, some little senator doesn't dare raise up his pointy little head and point out that might be a good idea without first pledging allegiance to Israel.
Well, yeah,
because they will be destroyed.
The thing is, you know, I believe that we have to separate Israel from Israel's government. Israel's government is a real problem. And you know, obviously they have enough support from people who are crazy enough. But I'm trying to look back at the underpinnings of this, you know, what's the source of this craziness? And because I think it's good to understand people. And first, let me say I'm very opposed to the craziness. You know, I do.
And that's really a good starting point, I have to say.
Well, it's the bottom line. I mean, you know, I think that these people can, they have the capacity to start World War III. And they are crazy enough to do that. And they are, and I think that what's way behind all of this is fear. You know, and, I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal for a lot of people in the U.S. And you've talked about that. You know, a lot of people have talked about it. But the here's where we're coming from. And I, you know, I'm going to put this real simplistically because I think it's the best way to look at it. And what I'm seeing is that you come out of World War II, you know, and what the Nazis did to the Jews. Of course, we know also they didn't just do it to the Jews. They did it to homosexuals. They did it to the
gypsies. They did it to the
mentally ill.
Mentally ill, the physically challenged. You know,
yeah.
Because they were going to have them some racial purity.
Right.
Which brings me to another story. I don't know if you saw this thing blow up last week, but apparently some government entities in Israel have gotten on the racial purity bandwagon.
Oh, I can see that.
But it ain't just racial purity.
Yeah.
They were... A YouTube commercial was released telling Israeli Jews not to marry American Jews.
Yeah, I did read that. Well, let me go back to this business. I think that there was a hope among a lot of Jews in the world to have a place where they could go where they simply would not be attacked. Because it wasn't just Nazi Germany. You know, you go into Russia and you got the pogroms.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which means...
Right, and you've got stuff going back 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And more. You know, the Jews killed Jesus.
So you got all this, let's call it, for lack of a better term, a race memory or, The people who lose the battles are the ones who remember them, right? And
sure does explain a lot about the South.
Yeah. And so here you've got all these people who have, I mean, the ones who were left, you know, who managed not to get killed.
And that's the sad tragedy of the Jewish people is that they have, well, I mean, not sad tragedy, okay, and one, I don't like the word tragedy because of the etymology. But the Jewish people have, over time, sat there time and again, going all the way back to stuff in the Old Testament. Never again.
That's right.
Never again.
We'll let history never forget, an old guy says with his finger waving in the air. I mean, I've seen it.
You know, it's so funny, when I was saying never again, I was waving my finger in the air.
Well,
the thing is, Richard, I believe that. And I believe that you need to collectivize, that'll get the right wingers going. You need to collectivize the memory of all the horrors. You know what? Because if you only say never again about one group of people, you guarantee that never again will prove fruitless with regard to some other. We need to say never again about what was done to the Jews, not just by Hitler, but for the 2,000 years before him. We need to say never again about what the Turks did to the Armenians. We need to say never again about what the white Europeans and the Roman Catholic Church did to the native and the indigenous population of the Americas. I mean,
it goes on and on.
There's lots of never again out there, and it's in that moment when we understand that nobody has an individualized right to never again, that never again is something we should never permit to happen among us.
Well,
the true growth takes place. Now, is that Holocaust denial? I hope not, because that's not what I'm about.
I have to say that, you know, I want to just say out front, I'm an atheist, and I it's one of the few good things I got from my parents. So I was...
Well, that's okay, because William O'Donohue of the Catholic League has announced Adopt an Atheist Week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I tried to adopt a bigot once, but that's a whole other story. I won't get into that.
Yeah, they want to adopt atheists to just let them know that they're loved, and that they can let out, and if they can just put aside all that atheist hatred, they can find the decent person that lives within them and acknowledges the saving grace of Christ Jesus.
Boy.
Yeah, I know. It's a little tough.
You came out of that culture, and I could really understand that.
Well, not that culture. I mean, that's William O'Donohue of the Catholic League. I mean, he's centered in New freaking York.
Yeah, no.
I mean, this is the guy who issues fatwas against sculptors who make chocolate Jesuses with his nasty manly bits showing for Easter. The guy had to go into hiding.
Well, back to this never again business. I thought it was all behind us, you know, and then Yugoslavia erupted. And I watched that, and Bob, I came so unglued, I cannot tell you. Oh my God, it's happening again.
Yeah, and Darfur. Or Rwanda. I mean,
And I have to say, you know, Darfur and Rwanda, I was just in overload. It was like, I was watching Yugoslavia and what the Serbs were doing to the people in Bosnia, and I couldn't handle it, especially when I saw film of a priest blessing the bad guys, you know, before they went and killed some more, you know, the priest blessing the Serb, I don't know what they were, militia, army, God knows what these people were, before they were going to go out and kill a few more Bosnians. And it's like, I couldn't handle it. I got on the phone, I called up the priest at a Serbian church. You know, we had quite a chat.
I can well imagine. Hey, Richard, there are some more blinking lights, and I want to try to get to them. But I really appreciate you dialing in, and I'm glad you got to listen to it. Do you need to be on hold for a little bit so you can hear the rest of the program?
No, what I'm going to do is I can download the streams, so I'm going to do that.
Okay, sounds good. Well, have a wonderful weekend, Richard. It's good to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you so much. You too, man.
Bye. Richard calling from the Bay Area. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Not much. I'm choking over here after listening to an uninformed numbskull.
No name calling. We're talking about the Horn family.
Doesn't matter. I call it as I see it.
Well, no, Cossack, we're not going to call names of members of the Horn family.
No
numbskulling. We save that for Republicans and right wingers.
To me, it doesn't matter who the offender is. They offend. But anyway,
you're talking, of course, about Richard's remarks about watching the
correct,
the
not knowing
Yugoslavian
not knowing
thing.
Crap. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm glad that he doesn't buy into the never again for the. For the Jews, but then again,
oh no, I think the whole point was that we do buy into the never again.
Well, that he doesn't personally buy into that idea.
You mean everything that goes with it, the Israel Uber Allahs?
Correct. Because one thing that we tend to forget is that, yes, the Nazis killed 6 million Jews, and that is a tragedy. They also killed 30 million Russians. They also killed over a million Serbs.
They killed gypsies. They killed homosexuals.
Correct.
They killed.
Yeah, what we forget is the war in Western Europe, which is what most of what we know about, we Americans know about the war, was different in kind than the war that was waged in the Slavic lands. It was a war of extermination. It was not, and it was an occupation of extermination.
And there were collaborators and pro-Nazis, and there were those who opposed the Nazis.
Correct.
And they were very ethnically divided. I mean, it was very, very clear. The Serbs were basically with the Allies, and the Croats went along with the Nazis. There's no getting around it. It's just history.
Yeah. The Nazis were the ones that were killing downed airmen, and the Serbs were the ones that were saving them. That's a big difference. Like, you ever heard of Operation Halyard?
Yep.
Yeah. We saved 500 downed U.S. airmen and returned them to the Allies to fight at enormous cost. I mean, the Germans would wipe out village after village looking for the downed airmen. They knew they were there. They couldn't find them because they had been
secreted away. Yes.
Yeah.
But all that having been said, given the amount of time that you've been on hold and your call preceded me even taking Richard's call. And even though you found what Richard had to say unsettling or upsetting, I'm guessing that wasn't the topic that caused you to pick the phone up.
No. Found it to be objectionable, but that's not the point. First, Richard's call did trigger a couple of lines of inquiry for me that I had to think about. One of the problems that we have, we Americans, and we hate to have people bring it up, is we are ignorant as a nation.
Oh, we're dirt dumb.
Yeah.
Ask any general, generally speaking, I would say, I mean, given, for instance, the results of any general polling of arbitrary Americans selectively sampled for statistical purposes, you know how they answer religion questions. You know how they answer geography questions. Well, I feel safe in speculating, and it is speculation, but I feel safe in speculating that the vast majority of Americans, when asked when did World War II begin, would gladly tell you December 7th, 1941.
Correct.
And God knows how many millions were already dead by that time.
Correct.
And we think we won that war, and it is a part. I think a certain degree of militaristic hubris must be within the genetic framework of the American character. Because do you remember what the American troops who were sent to the First World War were called? They had three little initials. It was the AEF.
Yeah, American Expeditionary.
You know what they called themselves?
Doughboys.
No. After England failed.
Right.
Okay? And to this day, I know who it was. It was that Mike Barnicle on that Morning Joe program. The morning that Mika talked about pictures that a little French exchange student, little girl, had drawn of her impression of Americans, and of course we're all fat and stupid and grease dripping down our jowls from our extra big-ass fries and whatever. And, you know, Barnacle said, well, by God, when that little girl gets home, somebody should take her to the fields at Normandy and let her see... And, you know, I'm used to that from right-wingers because goddamn French won't let us fly over French territory to bomb bomb Muammar Gaddafi's child's cradle? Screw them! You know, I remember even when Robin Williams was making jokes about that. You know, and freedom fries and freedom toast. And we've got this idea that somehow Europe just couldn't get on without us. But it ain't true.
Well,
we could never have landed at Normandy. Hell, we couldn't have landed at Anzio if it wasn't for the number of German troops being tied up on the Russian front. But we don't like to, you know, I was watching, you know, we talk about Bourdain a lot. I just happened to see a rerun of his Russia show.
Uh-huh.
And he showed something that I found both touching and inspiring. And that is, well, okay, so with the exception of folks like my kids, who know about World War II because they had a World War II veteran to talk to who made them interested in it, and there are portraits of young boys and young women hanging on the walls here that were produced in 1943 and 44. But most kids his age, my son and daughter's ages, they have no clue what World War II was. They don't know what December the 7th, 1941 was.
No.
And so, consequently, December 7th, 1941, you know, that's like remembering 1066. It's all ancient history. You know? And I'm you-knowing, I'm sorry. I'm getting a little head up. But the American people overestimate, and this is not intended in any way to take away from what was done, but we tend to overestimate or underestimate the sacrifices of others in order to elevate our own, and that is the hubris that is in the American character.
Yeah.
And it's really, really frustrating, Cossack. It's sickening, and it's you hear it from the right wing. Oh, damn French sissies. Well, you know, those French sissies rolled all over Europe in the first part of the 19th century. And basically Napoleon rewrote the manual for military tactics that were still in use at the time of the First World War.
Yeah.
You know, the Germans took what Napoleon did and sort of polished it and rubbed it down and made it shine a lot and really work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for example, this is not to disparage anything that the U.S. did in World War II, but the U.S. never, never came close to anything like Stalingrad. Never. That was a bloodletting on a massive scale, combat, close combat, to which Americans never, you know, they never were subjected to, room-to-room fighting, not house-to-house, room-to-room.
Oh, yeah, and I know what it was I was going to bring up a minute ago. Jim just reminded me because he emailed in and he said, 7 of 8 Germans killed were by the Red Army.
Correct.
And that says a lot. But, no, what I happened to see on Bourdain, I was talking about American children. Well, the government may have changed in what had been the Soviet Union is now Russia, but the memory and the reverence has not.
No.
And what they showed was a young couple starting their life, getting married, and apparently one of the things you do in Moscow is, having been married while you're still in your getting married duds, your tux and your dress if you can afford them, is you then take a bouquet of flowers and lay it at the tomb of the unknown of the great patriotic war.
Correct.
I can't help thinking that there is value to be had in that memory. Not warlike, not value in terms of willingness to make war, but value in terms of remembering the sacrifice, because even when we talk about remembering sacrifice in this country, Cossack, it's you know, when you thump it, it rings a little hollow and tinny, because it's all been co-opted by the right wing, and it has to be a justification for the next war. sort of like what I complain about every November 11th when we talk about Veterans Day instead of Armistice Day. It's not like there aren't 364 other days on the calendar that could be Veterans Day, but it is damned well worth remembering November the 11th. Just like it's damned well worth remembering, why didn't we make December 7th Veterans Day?
Good point.
Why didn't we make April the 5th Veterans Day? That's the day that the South surrendered, isn't it, at Appomattox Courthouse?
Yep.
Why isn't July the 4th Veterans Day? Why isn't the last Sunday in May Veterans Day? And I don't have an answer for that except to perhaps suggest that November 11th was convenient because it allowed us to, you know, it would be inconvenient to make it April the 5th because, after all, well, that would piss off the South. And July the 4th, well, everybody's always already turned that into a habit of getting liquored up and putting off fireworks, so let's not do that. Memorial Day, well, that's for the dead ones. Okay, so we don't want to do that. December the 7th, well, that sneak attack by the Japanese, that was just shitty, and we want to preserve that. So we'll make Veterans Day out of November the 11th Armistice Day because, after all, that's when we pulled Europe's fat out of the fire.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, again, when it comes to World War One. And after England failed, well, by the time that we had gotten into World War One, England had already lost over a million of its men on the front.
Yeah.
So had France. That's why the French were mutinying.
Yeah.
They didn't want to get fed into the meat grinder anymore.
Yeah, and have you noticed, just from a pop culture standpoint, Cossack, have you noticed what's coming out on Christmas Day?
No, what now?
It's a film by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
And what's it called? The War Horse?
Yeah, War Horse.
And I don't know anything about the movie, except for the fact that I watched these trailers about a horse coming back to a boy, or a boy going to find his horse in the trenches of France. It doesn't strike me as being another Schindler's List. And I don't want to see some prettied up heroic version of the First World War. I really don't want to see that.
Well, that's what you're going to get.
I suspect I will. I don't like Mel Gibson much.
Nope.
But I damn sure love that film Gallipoli.
Yeah.
Because... Well, and then, you know, there's the film version of All Quiet on the Western Front, and of course I'm a big read the damn book kind of guy anyway. But I do you remember when they made, and my father, oh, the poor man, I think it probably took a couple of years off his life, Cossack. He went to see that Disney extravaganza, Pearl Harbor. And it was a running gag. In our family, every time Dad would go to a movie, he'd come out and say, "Oh, I'm going to cry. I want my money back," because he'd swear he hadn't seen a decent movie since Pat O'Brien stopped making movies. And that time, he really did. He went to the box office and said, "I want my money back."
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Second World War veteran of the South Pacific, and that was disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh, he was. Oh, Cossack, he was mad. Jesus criminy, he was mad. And, well, you know, lucky for us, all the World War One veterans are now dead, so we can pretty it up and make a movie about a horse. Cossack, I got to roll. It was good talking to you. Just try to bear in mind, the Horn family is cohesive. And, you know, sooner or later, we're all going to say something. Trust me, I get the emails about the stuff I say. We're all going to say something that pisses somebody off, but, you know, let's try not to resort to... I'll talk to you later. Have a great weekend, all right?
You too, Bob.
All right, see ya. Bye now. Wow. Good Friday on the front porch, y'all. Email coming in from Andy. He said, I'm Slavic, too. I get it. The Serbs are very nationalist and went on a racist killing binge in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Srebrenica was one of many atrocities. Fact, it's a fact, many facts, showing a wanton killing spree went on against Bosnian and other local Muslims. Out of situations like that come no... There's no right side. And in large part, you can say that about any war, no matter how righteous one thinks the cause. That is why it is better to stay out of wars. Individual heroism, absolutely. There are stories, you know, Jesus, Restrepo, that brilliant documentary of covering the Marine unit in Afghanistan. You can't watch that without being touched and absolutely torn to pieces. But that does not serve, and the producers of Restrepo never meant for it to serve, that does not serve as an excuse for being there. Wars are evil. They're cradles, they're breeding grounds, they're cesspits where evil is bred and spreads. And then, of course, you've got George Patton saying, It is good that war is so often... Or maybe it was some damn Civil War Southerner. I can't remember anymore. It is good that war is so destructive, or else we should like it more. Yeah, see, Bill saying, yeah, those French sissies like Verdun, World War One, 500,000 casualties, French 250,000, 500,000 casualties, French 250,000 German, and they did not pass. Yeah. But try to explain that to, oh, I don't know, Dr. Newt. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful Friday on the front porch. Thank you so very much. I enjoyed it. I hope you did as well. Yeah, it's a little grim. Not exactly any contributions rolling in during the show tonight. Sorry, I hate to even talk about it, but your contributions are a great way of making sure there's a January horn and a February horn. And it's a little grim right now. Sorry about the truncated week. Sorry about last night. I will be on the road next week, but we will have a Monday show, I hope, all things being equal and the interweb tubes behaving themselves. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, all of this happen. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, who put me onto that Salon article, which I encourage you to go read. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox, our technical advisor, producer, chief engineer, and oh so many other things. Thank you, John. Hope you've had a good week. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Someday we really do have to tell the story of the White Rose Society. You will find it both inspiring and amazing. Thank you, Jim. Robert E. Lee said that. Well, I'm not surprised. Thanks, Jim. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there to learn about the Coal River Wind Project and all the other important work that Coal River Mountain Watch does. Join Coal River Mountain Watch. Get on the mailing list. Because when you do, you will know that you have become an active part in ending the Appalachian apocalypse. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.